This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for joining us. As we head into the Memorial Day weekend, the message in downtown Chattanooga for this summer, after more than a year of the pandemic, is loud and clear. Open for business. Marcus Ellsworth is program manager at River City Company. Marcus Ellsworth is program manager at River City Company. Marcus, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Ray. It's good to see you.
Good to see you as well. And a lot going on in downtown Chattanooga.
To put it lightly, yes. So like at River City Company, we're really excited that downtown is reopening. A lot of our businesses are coming back. A lot of the offices are starting to bring their workers back. And a lot of our event presenters are getting the ball rolling. I mean, this weekend, especially with Memorial Day coming up, the first event that we've sponsored that's coming up actually is with the Chattanooga Black Arts and Ideas Festival. They're having a commemoration of the Tulsa Massacre and a discussion around racism that's going to start in the Waterhouse Pavilion right out in front of our office. And then they're going to move into Miller Park for the full program. So we're really excited about that, kind of kicking things off. And they'll be doing events throughout the month. Then we've also got a couple of fun things to help welcome back our downtown workers who are coming in starting next week around the 2nd and 3rd. June 2nd, we have Basecamp is returning. For people who are familiar with Startup Week, it's a monthly series of all day long, like co-working, and there's presentations by professionals kind of sharing their experience and their wisdom with those who want to learn more about the business world, and some co-working opportunities throughout the day. Then on the 3rd, we're having a ice cream social in Miller Park with a DJ kind of playing out some tunes throughout from 11:30 to 1:30. And if you're an EPB employee and you show up to the Ben and Jerry stand with your ID, your employee ID, you get a free scoop of ice cream. So something extra special for our friends over at EPB. And then the 3rd, we have goat yoga in the Waterhouse Pavilion. If people want to come out and do yoga with baby goats. I mean,
we do need to explain that. A fair number of our audience probably knows what that is, but tell us a little more about exactly what's involved with goat yoga.
So I myself had to learn what exactly was goat yoga. The idea was presented. So, yoga, of course, the stretching and balance and core building exercise, but with the added layer of these cute, really super cute, like pygmy goats that are, trained to interact with folks during the yoga poses. So you might be getting into the pose and then the goat has been balanced on your back or your legs as you're, depending on your skill level. And so they kind of add a little extra weight, a little extra resistance. And it's also just kind of fun. And we'll have some like fun games and things going on around the pavilion as well for folks who don't want to participate in the yoga, but do want to see some adorable pygmy goats.
Want a goat yoga watch?
Yes. Oh, and we'll have a local juicery. We'll be out there too, serving up some refreshments. And that's going to be from 4 p.m. until 8 p.m. There are 3 sessions for that one. And when you sign up for the goat yoga, you get the added bonus of getting a ticket to the Chattanooga Football Club's game that Saturday. So it's like a 2-for-1 deal. So you sign up for the goat yoga and you also get to go to a soccer game.
And that's part of saying that downtown is reopening. Not only are there all these activities, but if you get involved in one activity, that will lead to another activity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're, because it's all of downtown. We're trying to get folks to realize that it's not just a couple of things coming back. Events aren't trickling back in. It's like the floodgates have opened. And a lot of the events are still practicing social distancing for folks who, still want to have that extra precaution. All the events that we're doing are outside or like in the pavilion where there's like really good ventilation because all the doors will be open. So we are still asking people to be considerate and have that extra layer of just a little bit of caution because some people are not fully ready to, come back in.
One thing that is coming back in beyond the events that you're talking about, beyond what River City Company is doing, is the music. The music is coming back to downtown.
Yes. And next weekend. Nightfall starts next weekend, and then Riverfront Nights is going to be running along on Saturdays. It's like the same time that Nightfall is. So your Friday and Saturday nights, there's music downtown. And then even throughout that, some of the businesses are going to be having, after Nightfall, opening their doors to the public. And so we always encourage people, like if you come down for Nightfall, don't just head on back out of downtown. Explore a little. Go see what businesses are open, what they've got going on. because almost everybody is doing something as these events come back to kind of like, you know, keep folks downtown and to make downtown more than just a one-stop destination, but to be a real experience, like, you know, plan your evening around just hanging out.
A lot going on and always looking for more ways to work with the rest of the community to tell people that downtown is back.
Yes. And we're also where we love partnering with presenting organizations or even individuals. So if, you know, you have an event that, you know, you'd like to bring downtown or an idea, we're always open to discussions and to help figuring out how we can bring some more life into downtown and also how to help folks who might be less experienced with event organizing and planning to help overcome some hurdles. Because we do know that sometimes the idea of putting on a big event downtown can seem daunting or like it's going to be super expensive. And, you know, we're more than happy to even like consult a little bit and to partner where we can.
And it might seem especially daunting for some people after more than a year of the pandemic, even if they want to get out, even if they have an idea and they want to get out there with that idea. Just given the past year, that passage of time could by itself can seem intimidating.
Yes, definitely. And I think there's a lot to learn too, because downtown has changed in the past year. Everything from entire remodelings, like Patton Parkway is now a completely different space. And I encourage folks to come check that out. We have some new art installations around downtown. We have some new businesses around downtown. And we have some that have relocated. They might not be where you would think they are, like, you know, Easy Bistro has moved out to the West Village. So it's also, I think, if you're coming back downtown, explore, like, look around. It's not quite what it was, and there's a lot of new life and energy coming into it.
Where can people go online for more information about all this?
You can find more information about all this at rivercitycompany.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Instagram at River City Company. And, and one more thing is we're starting a program called the Chattanooga Express Card, which is like a downtown dollars type program where you can basically get like a gift card and you can use it at any of the participating downtown businesses. And every day our list of participating businesses is growing. And if you sign up in this introductory period for this first few months, you actually get like a 50% bonus on your purchase. So like say you buy a $100 gift card to be like, okay, this is my weekend running money. You pay $100 on your card, you get an extra $50 added to that. So you get a little bit more than what you put in there. And yeah, there's also be posted on our website of the full list of participating businesses as we get ready to go.
All right, Marcus, thanks so much.
Thank you, Ray.
As Marcus Ellsworth told us, this year's Chattanooga Festival of Black Arts and Ideas will begin in the downtown, starting on Monday, Memorial Day. Ricardo Morris is the festival's founder and CEO. Rick, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
Tell us more about this year's festival.
Well, this is the fourth annual festival, and it's done in honor of Juneteenth. Obviously, last year, we were in the midst of a pandemic, and so a lot of the activities that would have taken place were not able to take place. However, we did manage to do a celebration on Walnut Street Bridge with a show of 157 RBG flags for the number of years from Juneteenth when it was done in 1865. So that was really great. So we're taking it slow as we try to get back into it this year. We still don't have a full slate of events. Most of the things that we planned this year are going to be on the outside, not the theater and not some of the other things that would have been on the inside. We are kicking off a little earlier than we have in the past in that we are trying to celebrate or commemorate, I should say, the 100th anniversary of Black Wall Street Massacre, which took place in Greenwood, which is a community inside Tulsa, Oklahoma, 100 years ago on the 31st. So we're going to kick that off in Miller Park with a dialogue of young people. We're calling it a townhouse meeting at the Waterhouse Pavilion there, talking about racism, talking about this past year, how they feel as young Black people here in Chattanooga, what are some things we can do to support them, to encourage them, to make them feel safe. And then we'll move from that space across the street into Miller Park. We'll have 300 red flags in memory of those that were massacred in Oklahoma.
And talk more about what happened in 1921.
You have this community that was pretty self-sustained in terms of a Black community. It was called Greenwood, located in Tulsa. It's like East Lake or other neighborhoods that we would have in Chattanooga, but it was part of Tulsa, Oklahoma. But it had all kinds of different businesses, doctor's offices, two schools. It had a hospital. It had an airport, but all self-sustained and run completely by Black people. And it was the richest Black community in the United States. And that's how it got the name Black Wall Street. So you had all this very self-sustained community. They never had to venture outside of that neighborhood into any of the rest of Tulsa. As is often the case, the white community in Tulsa were jealous and envious of it. But it's kind of started with a gentleman who went onto an elevator, tripped, ended up ripping the dress of a white woman that was on the elevator. She ran out screaming, but later said that he didn't do anything to her. But by that time, the white mob had gathered outside the jail and to try and lynch him. There was a Black presence of soldiers there and had just been let go from the war that was trying to protect the jail from that. Of course, they were overrun as well. And so by the time it was over, over 10,000 families and houses were displaced and burned to the ground. It probably was the first time ever in the United States that an attack was done from the air. So they dropped bombs onto that community and really totally decimated the entire community.
Because this was right after World War One.
Yeah, 1921. So yes. So this was an incredible assault on that community. And people fled into the woods and a lot never came back to that community in that neighborhood. That became known as the Black Wall Street Massacre in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
And you're beginning with that because Black arts and ideas, they don't occur in a vacuum. There is history. They are informed by the good and the awful, such as
That's right. So the reason for the name, the Festival of Black Arts and Ideas, is because it doesn't operate in a vacuum. We wanted to use the arts as a tool as well as entertainment. So it's a great way for healing. It's a great way for resolving issues. It's a great way to bring people together to give them a message that they probably wouldn't otherwise hear. And in our case, connecting Black arts to other issues and ideas within the community, whether it's economic development or whether it's Black history that has not been told the way it should have been told. And so that's the reason behind us commemorating this 100th anniversary. And we'll do it just that way. There will be spoken word that night starting at 6:21 in Miller Park. There will be singing. There will be dance. We even have, I'm calling it a visual art installation of 300 red flags to represent those lives that were lost. We'll have a wall of remembrance where people can sign names of people that have passed. And not just because of the 300 people that passed at Tulsa, but also remembering those who died from COVID, those who died from police brutality, and any other reasons that people have lost loved ones. We want to take this Memorial Day to remember that, which, by the way, is another holiday started by Black people. During the Civil War, a lot of the bodies, both Union and Confederate soldiers, were left on the fields. And enslaved and newly freed slaves gathered those bodies and buried them and had ceremonies, which would have been the first actions of a Memorial Day. So it's kind of ironic that we're having this commemoration of Black Wall Street, remembering those on another day that was also set aside and started by Black people here in America.
And beyond Memorial Day, as you say, this festival is spread out through Juneteenth. When you talk about Black arts and ideas, you have to talk about film.
That's right. And so we're doing a film festival. We're using Community Haven, which is located in East Chattanooga. And over the every Friday night from June the 4th through the 25th, we'll be introducing those different films outside again because of trying to adhere to some of the lingering COVID restrictions for that. We also are doing our Black Genealogy workshop, which will be held this year at Chattanooga State with that community. So we expect a bigger crowd that's going to be enjoying that as well. We're doing our visual art exhibition in cooperation with EPB in their windows. We'll be at Proof and as well as recently opened first Black gallery in Chattanooga called Quixote Gallery, which is located on MLK. So we're going to be doing a artist-to-artist roundtable with local artists, as well as Jerome Meadows, who was the artist to create the Ed Johnson Memorial. So again, just collaborating with a lot of different entities in Chattanooga with the Ed Johnson Project, with Bessie Smith. We're holding a vendor workshop on how to be a better small business entrepreneur on June the 1st. then commemorating Juneteenth on the 19th of June, starting at 3 o'clock, from 3 o'clock to 9 o'clock in Community Haven, which is at 815 North Hickory in East Chattanooga, which is a little different than what we've done in the past with Juneteenth. We really felt strongly about bringing it into the Black community. And so we're in a neighborhood in East Chattanooga for this year's Juneteenth celebration.
And this will be a block party.
It will be a block party. Lots of entertainment, vendors, field games. We're telling people to bring their lawn chairs and tents if they want to, blankets, and just, you know, relax and enjoy all the festivities. We're going to be having strawberry soda, which was one of a staple of the Juneteenth celebration. Is one of the things that they first did in the early celebrations of Juneteenth.
And where can people go online for more information about everything happening at the festival?
They can go to blackartsandideasfest.com. And both arts and ideas have an S, and it's all spelled out, blackartsandideasfest.com.
All right. Rick, thanks so much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Claire Stockman's job in the Hamilton County Schools is content lead for the arts. I spoke with her about what she does for teachers and students across nearly 80 schools and her work with our colleagues on our campus at the Arts-Based Collaborative at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga, ABC at UTC.
Claire, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us more about your role with Hamilton County Schools.
Well, it is my distinct honor and pleasure to support over 200 visual and performing arts teachers in all of our Hamilton County Schools K-12. So this encompasses music, dance, theater, and visual art teachers doing work with students from age 4 to age 18.
What does a day in that role look like for you? It probably varies a lot.
It does indeed. And that is one of the great pleasures of it, is some days I'm running an event that features 400 students from all over the county, and other days I'm working one-on-one with a theater teacher or working with an administrator to help build out their vision for the arts in their schools, or more often than not, just advocating and letting leaders and folks know what we have going on in the arts in schools, what our needs are, and where we're going next. It's truly so many wonderful things going on all the time.
And how have you been able to help students during this past year of the pandemic?
Well, just as, you know, everyone has found themselves looking into arts, entertainment, creative outlets, our students are experiencing that very same need to seek out music making, art making, movement experiences. What my teachers have found through the pandemic is that the students really want to dig into self-led and self-guided projects, which is absolutely perfect. It creates a stage for the teacher to be a facilitator and guide students in techniques and mediums, and then let the students really just fulfill projects using their own thoughts, their own ideas, their own observations, and their own learning and lived experience. So it's really been a very special year for student art creation. When we have been learning at home, we don't have the confines of the school bell schedule. So we find that a lot of our, especially our high school art students, have been able to pour a lot of their time into creating artwork.
And part of your experience is you are a classically trained soprano.
That is true. That is not a skill set that I exercise very often, but it is a joy and a love for me. And to be honest, singing is one of the many art forms that really supported me through tricky middle school and tough teenage years.
You have degrees in music education, you've studied music learning theory, and you authored a master's thesis on music for children with severe autism. Tell me more about that.
So I was so lucky in my undergraduate degree to be at the University of South Carolina, where Dr. Ed Gordon was a professor emeritus. And Dr. Gordon is the developer of music learning theory, which is a research-based theory about the way that we acquire musical skills and knowledge. Dr. Gordon always said that music learning starts 9 months before birth. And so it's really not about formalized learning. It's about experiential learning. And then following the language acquisition model, which is demonstrated in all language learning, whereas first we listen, then we babble, then we start to read, and then we write and create language. And so our music learning unfolds in the same way. I was so lucky and blessed to encounter a student in my undergraduate teaching who had severe autism, and he literally ended up in my lap during a music class. And as it turned out, he taught me more than any other teacher or professor. And what he taught me was teaching is teaching no matter who you're teaching. And so we all have special learning needs. We're all unique learners. And so the art and craft of the teacher is taking that material and shaping it for the learner and then creating an environment where that learner can't help but take it up. And so that is really something that we arts educators just relish in. You know, whether you're on the podium conducting a beginning band, whether you're watching freshmen in high school at their first time at the pottery wheel, whether you're, you know, with awkward middle school dancers, I mean, just watching our students become artists in their own right is the true gift and the true magic that we get to watch unfold in our schools.
You've taught elementary music in the Hamilton County Schools, and you completed an education specialist degree in instructional leadership on our campus here at UTC.
That's correct. I'm a Mock.
Also, a leadership fellow with the Public Education Foundation of Chattanooga. And that brings us to, how do you see equity of access and quality of arts education throughout the Hamilton County Schools, where things stand now, what you've been working on with others, and what more needs to be done?
We have 78 schools in the county, and every single one is very different. Every community in Hamilton County is very different. We span, I think, 583 square miles. We have rural, suburban, and urban settings. And in Hamilton County Schools, one thing that we have really done well over the past few years is employ more elementary art teachers. These are teachers that are certified in visual art education, and they're providing creative learning experiences for every elementary school student. I, of course, as the lead advocate for the arts, am always hoping that we'll get even more positions so kids can have even more art-making opportunities. But what we know in Hamilton County Schools is that our goal is for every student to leave our campuses future ready. And what we mean by that is they are empowered and equipped to go out and pursue their dreams. It may be that while they're in our school, they discover their dreams and they shape their dreams. It may be that some experience in school really, really takes them on a journey of their skill set and their talents. But in Hamilton County Schools, we are seeking to give students more opportunities and a wider variety of learning experiences. So I'm really proud of the ways we've been able to add programming, to be able to add elementary art, to be able to add things like modern band in our middle and high schools. And a lot of times these things are done through external partnerships, local partnerships, national partnerships. And I mentioned that I support 200 teachers in 78 buildings. I really can't do it without the help and support through teacher training, through advocacy, through in-kind donations, through materials. It's really our whole community coming together that allows us to provide rich opportunities for students. And I've got really big dreams for the county, really big dreams that every single student in Hamilton County Schools would have really rich, high quality arts experience that I enjoyed as a student that really convinced me that I could achieve any dream that I set my mind to.
Tell us more about how your work contributes to the arts-based collaborative on our campus, what we like to call ABC at UTC.
Arts-based collaborative has a really rich history of supporting teachers and supporting administrators in schools. As formerly the Southeast Center for Education in the Arts, they developed a rich library and really wonderfully consistent annual in-service trainings for teachers. Arts-based collaborative is really an innovative partner in our area as they're looking to using theater students to help train medical students and ways that we can infuse the arts in every subject area. And that's a value that we share between Hamilton County Schools and Arts-Based Collaborative, is how can the arts support all learning and all learning support the arts? So we're also engaged with ABC at UTC through our national partnership with the Kennedy Center for Performing Arts in Washington, D.C. ABC is one of our valued partners as we ensure the arts for every child. And so what that looks like is crafting advocacy. And in the fall, we'll be kicking off some listening and surveying efforts to really ask the community, what does this look like? What should our next steps be? And how are the arts a part of your life? And how can it be an even stronger part of student learning and experience in our community? So ABC at UTC has been a valuable thought partner and work partner for years and years. And we're very excited as they explore this new frontier of the arts in every area.
And for people who want more information about the arts-based collaborative at UTC, ABC at UTC, they can go to utc.edu/arts-based-collaborative. What's next?
Well, the big news right now is our Summer Reach program. We're offering two sessions this summer, 3 weeks in June and 3 weeks in July. This Summer Reach program is completely free to families and students, and students are going to get a lot of academic support as well as social emotional learning and innovation and arts. So in elementary school, students will have opportunities to have PE every day, to have art, music, and STEM, and then in middle and high school, it's an abbreviated day with some afternoon enrichment activities. So this year, the school doors will be open in the summer to invite students to continue their learning. And then I think we're all looking really forward to a fresh start in August 2021, where we are seeking to get back on this learning path and continue to help equip students for a life without limits.
And if people want more information about those programs, where can they go online?
If you just go to hcde.org, that's the Hamilton County Department of Education, and you'll be able to find registration information for Summer Reach.
All right. Claire, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
James McKissick, the president of Arts Build here in Chattanooga, is the next guest on the A-List with Allison Leibovitz tonight at 8:30 p.m. on WTCI PBS.
What do people not understand about arts community and the investment it has in any city, but especially in Chattanooga and our region, that you think they should know, right? Like, what's that one message you want people to understand?
Well, I think people don't understand the economic impact of the arts. And, you know, just in Hamilton County, the arts and culture sector gives $172 million back into our economy in a typical year. It actually employs almost 6,500 people, but you will never see the arts listed when they list like the top employers in Chattanooga, even though the arts is one of those large employers. Mm-hmm. But another thing that I always try to remind people is the arts is workforce development too. People work behind the scenes in the arts. People are, you know, it's not just Beyonce that's on the stage. There's like hundreds of people that pull together to put on a show or a performance, from the usher all the way up to the main entertainer. So the arts employs a lot of people. It drives our economy, but so often we treat it as fluff or something that's fun to do. And sadly, too, a lot of people still see it as something that's elitist or that those other people do.
Watch the full conversation on the A-List with Allison Leibovitz tonight at 8:30 p.m. on WTCI PBS. You're listening to Scenic Roots on WUTC. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for listening to Scenic Roots. We come to you from WUTC at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Email us at scenicroots423@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at scenicroots423. Listen to us online anytime at WUTC.org and the WUTC app. For Richard Winham and the rest of our team, join us again next time for Scenic Roots.